Kishoranandana Brajajanarandana Kishoranandana Brajajanarandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashodanandana Brajajanarandana Yashodanandana Brajajanarandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Paramahamsa Parivrajaka Acharya Ashutara Sutra Sri Sri Maresi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Tantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Go Premanande Hari Hari Go Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All glory to the assembled devotees All glory to the assembled devotees All glory to the assembled devotees Agar is the Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3 Krishna is the source of all incarnation Text number 33 Word meanings Yatra, whenever Ime, in all these Sat, asat Gross and subtle, rupe, in the forms of pratishuddhe, on being nullified, swasangvida, by self-realization, avidyaya, by ignorance, atmani, in the self, krite, having been imposed, iti thus tat, that is brahmadarshanam, the process of seeing the absolute. Yatre me sarasadrupe pratishuddhe svasangvida avidyayatmani krite iti tat brahmadarshanam yatre me sarasadrupe pratishuddhe svasangvida avidyayatmani krite iti tat brahmadarshanam yatre me sarasadrupe pratishuddhe svasangvida avidyayatmani krite iti tat brahmadarshanam yatre me sarasadrupe pratishuddhe svasangvida avidyayatmani krite iti tat brahmadarshanam yatre me sarasadrupe Translation. Whenever a person experiences by self-realization that both the gross and subtle bodies have nothing to do with the pure self, at that time he sees himself as well as the Lord. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The difference between self-realization and material illusion is to know that the temporary or illusory impositions of material energy in the shape of gross and subtle bodies are superficial coverings of the self. The coverings take place due to ignorance. Such coverings are never effective in the person of the personality of Godhead. Knowing this convincingly is called liberation, or seeing the absolute. This means that perfect self-realization is made possible by adoption of godly or spiritual life. Self-realization means becoming indifferent to the needs of the gross and subtle bodies and becoming serious about the activities of the self. The impetus for activities is generated from the self, but such activities become illusory due to ignorance of the real position of the self. By ignorance, self-interest is calculated in terms of the gross and subtle bodies, And therefore, a whole set of activities is spoiled, life after life. When, however, one meets the self by proper culture, the activities of the self begin. Therefore, a man who is engaged in the activities of the self is called Jivan Mukta, or a liberated person even in the conditional existence. This perfect stage of self-realization is attained not by artificial means, but under the lotus feet of the Lord, who is always transcendental. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he is present in everyone's heart, and from him only all knowledge, remembrance, or forgetfulness take place. When the living being desires to be an enjoyer of material energy, illusory phenomena, the Lord covers the living being in the mystery of forgetfulness, and thus the living being misinterprets the gross body and subtle mind to be his own self. And by culture of transcendental knowledge, when the living being prays to the Lord for deliverance from the clutches of forgetfulness, the Lord, by his causeless mercy, removes the living being's illusory curtain, and thus he realizes his own self. He then engages himself in the service of the Lord in his eternal constitutional position, becoming liberated from the conditioned life. All this is executed by the Lord, either through his external potency or directly by the internal potency. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuran militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. This verse, as I would like to look at the context of it, we finished recently, of course, this chapter is Krishna is the source of all incarnations. So text 29, this is text 33, sort of summarizing that after, at the end of the list, it says, whoever carefully recites the mysterious appearances of the Lord with devotion in the morning and in the evening gets relief from all miseries of life. Then the next verse mentions the universal form. So you have the whole list of the Lord's avatars, and you have this verse saying the benefits of reciting, discussing them. And then there's a mention of the universal form. So the idea is that, well, someone may think, well, what happened? The Virat Rupa was left out of the list. So that verse, text 30, says, the conception of the Virat universal form of the Lord as appearing in the material world is imaginary. It is to enable the less intelligent and neophytes to adjust to the idea of the Lord's having form, but factually the Lord has no material form. So it's not that it's called the Lord's Virat Rupa, his universal form. But it's not, Krishna's form is Satchidananda Vigraha, but the material world is his external energy. So even though it's called his form, it's not actually his form in the ultimate sense. So then yesterday's verse, I'm skipping one verse, then yesterday's verse said, beyond this gross conception of form, in other words, a universal form, another subtle conception of form, which is without formal shape and is unseen, unheard, and unmanifest, is another subtle. The living being has his form beyond this subtlety, otherwise he could not have separated births. Now this verse, Srila Prabhupada takes it immediately to the jiva, and the jiva's being covered by two bodies, the subtle body and the gross body. But actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has elaborated on this, saying that besides the Lord's gross material form, the Virat Rupa, he has a subtle, universal form. He has a subtle universal form. And that's what this verse is about. And so I'm going to read some of what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says about this, because I think it's an interesting concept. It's not something that we hear about a lot. It's just like sometimes it's said that the Lord is the soul of the universe, or the super soul of the universe. So that if that universe is like his body, then he also has a subtle body. Just as we have a subtle body and a gross body, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who enters into the universe, he also has a subtle body and a gross body. So this is something. Now, first of all, I'm getting this by the translations of Bhanuswami. What Bhanuswami does is, because Vishwanath, He's writing in Sanskrit, so he doesn't translate the verse into Sanskrit because it's already into Sanskrit. So he doesn't put a translation, he just makes his commentary. So what Bhanud Swami does is he tends to write his translation by seeing what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has revealed about the verse. So he bases his translation on his commentary. So this is his translation of this. That this was the previous verse, Friday's verse. Superior to the gross universal form is that form which is invisible, devoid of the specific bodily parts, since it cannot be seen or heard. This is like the subtle body of the jiva, which is the instrument of rebirth for the jiva. So you see, he's describing this. This is actually about, he's saying this verse is about the Lord's subtle universal form. So then Vishwanath says, just as yogis worship the visible form of the universe as the Lord, even though it is material. Actually, you know, in the beginning of the second canto where Shukadeva Goswami, the first thing he says is describe that chapter, the first step in God realization. So he talks about meditation on the universal form of the Lord. So that's, it said here, it says that yogis do that. Even though it's material, you can benefit by doing that. He says, other yogis worship a subtle form of the universe as the Lord, even though it is also material. These forms are described later. So then he quotes a verse from the second canto, 10th chapter, text 35. Now the 10th chapter of the second canto is the last chapter of the second canto. And the 9th chapter is where Lord Brahma gets darshan of the Lord, and he hears the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam. And in the 10th chapter of the second canto, we hear first a delineation of the 10 subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then there's a description of some aspects of the creation, especially the senses and the sense objects, that kind of thing. And it's done in the context of the universal form, the Mahapurusha. The Mahapurusha wanted to hear, and therefore ears were created. And so on, this kind of thing is given there. You even think that it sounds like it's talking about a real person, but it's just a conception for understanding how the creation unfolds. So there's a verse here that says, I'll explain the context of it later, but that's verse 210.35 says, the wise do not accept these two forms of the Lord described by me, since they are composed of matter. So this is a reference to these two, the subtle and gross Virat Rupa. So then Vishwanath Chakravarti, in his commentary here, he gives some verses that describe the gross Virat Rupa, so I'm skipping that, but then he says, the subtle form is different from the gross form of the universe. It is actually invisible or subtle, avyaktam. Now that's in, was that in yesterday? I think that was in the text 32. Yes, these verses, ataparam yad avyaktam, ayudha guna brinhitam. Adrishta Shruta Vastutva Sajivo Yat Punarbhava. So he's going to refer to some of these words that were in Friday's verse. He said it is actually invisible or subtle of Yaktam because it is devoid of specific forms, Ayudha Guna Brinhitam. It does not have evolved hands and feet. Now when we hear about the universal form, of course we hear about all the different parts of the body. His head is this, his arms are this, his legs are this, and so on. So you conceive of it as a kind of actual form. But he's saying the subtle universal form doesn't have that. Then he says, why? It is not like things with form, like you, I, or Indra, who can be seen and heard. Adrishta Shruta Vastutva. Vastutva means, vastu means substance, so it's insubstantial. Adrishta, ashruta, can't be seen and cannot be heard. What is the proof of its existence? The subtle body is the proof, means our subtle body. The word jiva should be understood to mean the imposition on the jiva of the subtle body. The gross body of the jiva is his false designation for enjoyment in this world. Why do we need to make another false designation? So this is an opponent or someone is questioning. Why do you need this subtle body, this idea, this conception of universal subtle body? So this question is asked, why do we need to make another false designation? We already have the material bodies, isn't that enough for the soul? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answers, because this subtle body, by this subtle body, the jiva takes repeated births, involving leaving a body, entering a body, and remaining in a body. This would be impossible without the subtle body. So this is an explanation I never heard before, why we need a subtle body, because that subtle body carries us from one body to another. What's an important part of our existence in this material world, of course, is transmigration. We leave one body, we go to another body. So the vehicle that carries us there is the subtle body. So, of course, there's more to the subtle body, but the subtle body doesn't just that. It acts within the body as we're, when we're present there. But this is the way Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is explaining why the subtle body exists and we are in it, because it carries us from one body to another. So then he continues, these forms are attributed to the Lord, but are not actually the Lord, because both the gross and subtle bodies are material, and their souls are the jivas individually and collectively. It is said, so then he quotes this verse. This verse, if I remember correctly, comes from, it's quoted in someone's commentary, Sridhar Swami's commentary on one verse in the 11th canto. And the actually, it's quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita also without any citation of where it's from. So the verse says, Virad Hiranya Garbhascha Karanam Chetyupadaya Ishasya Yantri Birhinam Turiyam Chapchakshate. The universal form of matter, Hiranya Garbha, and then in parentheses, Bhanu Swami writes, the form of the collective jivas, as the cause of the universe, is false. The state of the Supreme Lord is said to be devoid of such limitations. Actually, the word in the verse is turiya. It talks about the fourth. Was that this verse or the previous? Anyway, so this idea, Hiranyagarbha, I spent a long time trying to figure out, what is Hiranyagarbha? It's a word that we hear here and there, and I was really confused because I came up with a lot of different answers. Actually, when Prabhupada was giving Hiranyagarbha Das his name, he says it is a name for Lord Brahma or Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, generally Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, he said. So you'll find this. Lord Brahma is specifically mentioned. For example, when Lord Brahma arrives, you know, in the beginning of the fifth canto, Swayambhuva Manu wants, what's his name? Priyavrata wants Priyavrata to rule, and Priyavrata has been taught by Narada Muni, so he basically wants to be a renunciate, but he has to take on this management. He doesn't really want to do it. So Lord Brahma comes. So when Lord Brahma comes down, he's described, the word used for him is Hiranyagarbha. So Brahma is often called Hiranyagarbha, and Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is also called Hiranyagarbha. Now this word Garbha, sometimes translated as womb, but another translation is fetus. And Hiranya means golden, so a golden womb or golden fetus. So this is, the Hiranyagarbha appears as part of the creation of the universe. And, well, let me read something here. This is from the beginning of the sixth chapter, third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's another one of these creation stories. We have a lot of them in the Bhagavatam. So there's some description here. I'll just read. There's four or five verses. I'll just read the translations. The elements for creating the universe combined together by the Lord who had entered by his portion formed a fetus in which all the planets and living entities exist. Again, this is Bhanu Swami's translations based on Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries. This golden universal form. So now what this is all the elements of the creation. You know, Krishna, Lord Vishnu, he creates the elements of the creation. And then Lord Brahma takes those elements and does all the construction of the universe. So these elements combine together, and Hiranmaya, it's called Hiranmaya at this point. Maya means made of, and Hiran means gold. This golden universal form containing all the resting jivas remained in the waters within the universe for 1,000 years. This fetus composed of the elements endowed with jiva shakti, prana shakti, and atma shakti divided itself into 1, 10, and 3 parts by its own powers. So I won't get into what those parts are. So then this form of the unlimited beings, the Hiranyagarbha, this form is the soul of unlimited beings, the Hiranyagarbha. It is the jiva in relation to Paramatma. It is seen as the original avatar. Within this form, all living beings appear. So this is, as far as I can tell by reading other places and other commentaries, the general description of Hiranyagarbha is that it's the soul or the combined, all the jivas, basically, all the jivas. And those jivas, the soul of those jivas, is said to be Lord Brahma. I've mentioned in class before that there are actually three forms of Brahma. And I can't remember exactly how it goes. Because this whole creation, we get different descriptions in different places and different steps, so it can get a little confusing. But one of those Brahmas is this, the soul of the jiva, all the conglomerate jivas. It's called the samashti. There's vyashti and samashti. Vyashti jiva means the singular jiva, and samashti jiva, sum means to come together. So samashti jiva means all the jivas taken together. So one of the bodies of Lord Brahma is all of the jivas taken together. It's also said that the lotus flower that comes from the navel of Lord Vishnu is all of these jivas. So we have these different descriptions. So there's also a form of Brahma called Vairaja Brahma, which I'm not exactly sure what that is, although I read recently somewhere that, you know, in the description of the universe in the fifth canto, it says that on top of Mount Meru, Lord Brahma resides. So you may think, well, what's he doing up there? I thought he was on Brahma Loka. So on top of Mount Meru is Lord Brahma, and then also the major demigods like Varuna and Indra, and I forget who else, they also have a little smaller places around Lord Brahma's place. So I read that it was Vairaja Brahma who was seated there. And we also hear about, well, of course, the four-headed Brahma. He's the one that we're the most familiar with. In fact, he may be the most gross in the sense of, you know, having a form that we can somehow sort of relate to, is that four-headed Lord Brahma. So he has different forms. So this, for one thing, this points out Lord Brahma, he's not an ordinary person. That's why sometimes Vishnu himself takes the post of Brahma, because it's practically, Brahma is practically Vishnu, he's so close. And sometimes that post, of course, is taken by Lord Vishnu. So that's a little something about this Hiranyagarbha. So as far as I can tell, putting these pieces together, it seems to me that what is being referred to here as the subtle form of the universe may in fact be this Hiranyagarbha, the subtle universal form. There seems to be an equivalence here, although it's hard to. I was doing all kinds of detective work trying to fit the pieces together, but it's really hard sometimes to understand these things. They're not always spelled out. And Prabhupada, the way he translates sometimes, he doesn't get into the nitty-gritty of these kinds of things. And he brings it more, you might say, brings it down to earth for our understanding. And he doesn't get very technical about it, so it's sometimes hard to find out what the technical meaning, what it actually means in the technical sense. So I'll continue with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Now I'll go on to the next verse, the verse that I read today. This is also what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says about this verse. So the verse says, although I'll read the translation again, whenever a person experiences by self-realization that both the gross and subtle bodies have nothing to do with the pure self, at that time he sees himself as well as the Lord. Of course, the word here was Brahma Darshanam. So Brahma means spirit, the absolute truth. So Prabhupada in the purport, he says that we will see both ourself and the Lord. Because Brahma, aham brahmasmi, we say, I am Brahman. But that doesn't mean we're the supreme Brahman. It means the jiva is Brahman by constitution or spiritual by constitution. So Brahma Darshanam can be either of those things. It can be to see the self, or it can mean to see Parabrahma, the supreme absolute truth. And when you're purified, actually the way Prabhupada describes it in the purport, he says, first you see yourself, and then you see the Lord. Because when you see yourself, you get that transcendental vision, then you're able to, in other words, you've developed the vision to see Brahman. Of course, there are different aspects of Brahman, you know, Vadanti Tattva Vidas, but we may see him in different ways. Anyway, so that's the translation. So then, Now, do I, did I have Vishwanath's translation here? Anyway, I'll read here. Oh, he says, so this questioner's questions. If this is actually all material, how can we become, how can we see Brahman? In other words, if there's a subtle universal form and a gross universal form. So if this is all material, how can we, what seems to be implied here is how by meditating on these or perceiving these, the universe, can we see Brahman? This verse answers, these two material forms, gross and subtle, are removed. This means that the non-material form of the Lord is not removed. In other words, his Satchidananda form. These forms are removed by the realization, samvida, of the Lord's devotees, swa. Why are these two forms not situated in the Lord? These forms are imposed on the jiva by ignorance and are not situated in the Lord. It is said, in other words, Krishna doesn't really have, like we have, our subtle body and gross body. Krishna doesn't really have these things. They're not imposed on him, these energies. So then there's another verse here. The imposition of the body exists in the jiva by ignorance, by identifying with the body. In this manner, the universe is not imposed upon the Paramatma. With the removal of these two material forms, one can see Brahman. So now I'm going to go, this is the verse that was mentioned before. Beyond this, the gross manifestation, is a transcendental manifestation. Oh no, this refers to the Friday's verse. This is another translation of it. So that verse, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, it mentions four things about this subtle form. Let's see. It's invisible, it's abhyaktam, it's nirvishesha, without qualities, anadi madhya nidhanam, it has no beginning, middle, or end, and nityam, it remains eternally. Now Srila Prabhupada, interestingly, when he comments on this, I forget which one of these purports it is, but he takes it to be the impersonal Brahman. So he takes it a step further, you might say. He doesn't really get into this difficult to understand subtle form of the universal form. Having described the gross form, now the subtle form of the universe is described. When the most subtle is mentioned, it means very subtle. The subtle body of the universe, a form of Maya, is described in four phrases. And that's what I was just explaining. So then this verse, which Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur refers to 2:10:35. The wise do not accept these two forms of the Lord described by me, since they are composed of matter. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Shukadev condemns these two forms which are imposed on the form of the Lord for the purpose of worship. Interestingly, this must refer to the yogis, because the yogis do a kind of worship, you might say. The dual case indicates the oneness of the gross and subtle forms of the universe, samashti, and its coverings, maha samashti. There's that word again. So here it's taken in a different way. The gross and subtle forms of the universe, samashti, and its coverings, maha samashti. So the universe is, you know, what's inside, you might say, and then the coverings, then that's really the whole universe. When you, sometimes we hear about the size of the universe, 4 billion miles. There's one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the size of the universe, and it's some huge number, I forget what it is, some quadrillion miles or something. And you think, well, what is this? It's supposed to be 4 billion. So he must be including the coverings of the universe. You know what, each one is 10 times bigger than the other. So when you add them all up, when you get 7 degrees out there, you're talking about really big numbers there. So this is the Maha Samashti. This is the big universal form of the Lord, which includes the coverings. The wise do not accept these two forms as the object of attainment, but only as forms for worship at the beginning stage. So this is what Shukadeva Goswami does. Basically, meditation means, you know, kind of worship. Since they don't accept them, but since they are made of Maya, even the very subtle form, the cause of the others, is material. Those who are wise, the pure devotees, vipashchitaha, do not accept these forms even at the first stage. So even though that chapter is called the first step in God realization, that's not the first step in ISKCON's God realization. We weren't taught in the beginning to meditate on the universal form, because we're coming in the parampara of pure devotees, which is immediately anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma dinavrita. We're trying to execute pure devotional service right from the beginning. They accept the forms of Ram, Krishna, and Nrsimha made of Shuddha Sattva in the stages of sadhana and perfection. So we begin right from there. So that's a little something about these two universal forms of the Lord. I just want to comment on a couple of things that struck my mind in the purport. One thing I was thinking, this language of Prabhupada, it seems to have changed. You know, when he first wrote, when he was starting to write and he was still living in India, the way he would, his diction was in a certain style, you might say. And then later it changed, you know, over time, preaching more in English. Of course, as he did, he was constantly speaking in English and thinking in English and so on. So there's this one sentence here. By ignorance, self-interest is calculated in terms of the gross and subtle bodies, and therefore a whole set of activities is spoiled life after life. But then this sentence. When, however, one meets the self by proper culture, the activities of the self begin. So I was thinking, well, what does Prabhupada mean by culture here? Does he mean, you know, just like there are so many cultures around the world. So, you know, in Japan, the culture involves this kind of dress with kimonos, or it used to be anyway. And in India, people dress, culture is part, our language is part of culture, and dress is part of culture, and different habits. Is that what Prabhupada is talking about here? When one meets the self by proper culture? But I don't think so. So I went to the dictionary, and there, that culture means kind of, you might say, cultivation. Oh, I think I wrote, did I write it down here? I was going to, maybe I didn't. Anyway, the idea is that, yeah, culture means, you know, working something, to produce something, to advance something. So our culture, of course, is sadhana bhakti. That seems to be what Prabhupada is referring to here. One meets the self by proper culture. Culture means cultivation of our Krishna consciousness by the services and practices that Prabhupada has given us. And when I read this, I was thinking, it reminded me of this in Prabhupada's early BTGs, some of the earliest ones. He didn't use it all the time, but sometimes he used a subtitle, call it. Just like we have, what is it? Ignorance is darkness is ignorant. Ignorance is, I forget how it goes. Where there is light, there's no ignorance. Nescience, I can't even remember. Here I am, the editor of BTG, and I can't remember. So nescience is darkness, right? That's how it starts. Anyway, that's one. So then there was another one that this Prabhupada would have sometime. He said, for Bhakti Gaudi, it was called an instrument for training the mind and educating human nature to rise up to the plane of the soul spirit. I thought, what a nice phrase that is, isn't it? An instrument for training the mind and educating human nature to rise up to the plane of the soul spirit. So that's culture, I thought. That's the culture that Prabhupada is talking about here. And, this was another, the very last line of the purport, the last sentence. He says, not the last line, actually. Getting towards the last. Let's see. Actually, he says, the culture of transcendental knowledge, again, later in the purport. When a living entity prays to the Lord for deliverance from the clutches of forgiveness, the Lord, by his causeless mercy, removes. This is what I was thinking of. He then engages himself, the soul, in the service of the Lord, in his... Oh, wait a minute, I must be reading. There's one place where Prabhupada says, by his material... Is that the last line? I'm missing it now. Oh, here, it is the last sentence, I'm sorry. All this is executed by the Lord, either through his external potency or directly by the internal potency. So we have, everybody knows in our movement, part of our philosophy is that this material world is for our reformation. And we generally, the story that we tell is that we get so fed up at some point that we turn to spiritual life. I want, what is the solution? But for a long time, I was thinking, where does it say that, actually? Is there a verse that actually says that somewhere? I can't just accept, right? I have to. So then recently I realized, I think in my last class I mentioned, at the beginning of the prayers by the personified Vedas, Preacher Maharaj asked Shukadeva Goswami a question. Basically, he wants to know, how is it that you can get Brahman, realization, by reading the Vedas? The Vedas are just words. The words are just ordinary sound. So then the answer to that question, actually in the purport it discusses how it doesn't seem like the answer matches up with the question, but Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains why it does. But this is the way Shukadeva Goswami answers the question. Well, I'll read the question in India. So the question is, Sri Parikshit said, O Brahmana, how can the Vedas directly describe the Supreme Absolute Truth, who cannot be described in words? Actually, there are phrases in the Upanishads that say that you can't describe the Lord in words, or the Absolute Truth. The Vedas are limited to describing the qualities of material nature, but the Supreme is devoid of these qualities, being transcendental to all material manifestations and their causes. Now, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says in his commentary that he's asking on behalf of the impersonalists, Parikshit Maharaj. He wants to get an answer that will satisfy them. So Shukadeva Goswami said, so you understand the question, how can the Vedas describe transcendence? They're just words. So this is the answer. The Supreme Lord manifested the material intelligence, senses, mind, and vital air of the living entities so they could indulge their desires for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, become elevated in future lives, and ultimately attain liberation. So this answers my question of where does it say this in the Vedas, in our books. This directly says it, that this material world is created for us, you can say, to enjoy materially until we get fed up, and then we try to attain liberation, dharma, artha, kama, and ultimately moksha. But actually, I won't read the whole purport here because it's getting late. But the basic idea is, I'll just go to the end of the, it says, this is how it answers. Just as the merciful Lord has given us all facilities for perception for experiencing and describing to others the sensations of sight, sound, and so forth, in this way he may give someone the receptive capacity to realize Brahman. He may, if he chooses, create some extraordinary way for words to function, apart from their ordinary references to material substances, qualities, categories, and actions, that will enable them to express the Supreme Truth. He is, after all, the Almighty Lord, Prabhu, and he can easily make the describable indescribable. So, you know, how that follows on what I was saying, but you may have to read the purport yourself to understand. Actually, it says here that, someone may say, well, he didn't really answer the question. A skeptic may object to this answer is irrelevant. But Vishwanath, he explains how it's not. And one thing he says is that, there's a verse by Krishna in the 11th canto, Parokshavara Rishaya Paroksham Mama Chapriyam. The Vedic seers and mantras deal in esoteric terms, and I also am pleased by such confidential descriptions. So sometimes Krishna speaks, and the acharyas speak in such a way that only certain people can understand the answer. So you have to become qualified to understand the answer sometimes. Actually, we saw this often with Prabhupada. I mean, I've been sometimes listening to like a morning walk. Someone will ask Prabhupada a question, and you hear the answer, and you say, what? That the answer? I don't understand how that answers the question. So, of course, a lot of times Prabhupada wanted to get back to another point that he was making. So he was trying to get the devotee back. Don't ask something. We haven't finished this one yet. But parokshavad means sometimes Krishna speaks in indirect ways. And sometimes that's the best way to get to the point. Because we always have to understand, we're talking about Brahman. We're talking about the absolute truth. We can't get it so easily into our minds. It's very difficult. We want things to be so straightforward. This, I think, this is one of the problems I was having with this word, Aranyagarbha. well, maybe it's not so easy to understand this kind of subtle thing that's going on up there, and why we have different descriptions of the creation, because you can look at it from different angles of vision. What was the word I was just seeing the other day? Oh, I know what it was. The Abhashya. I was hearing Abhashya. You know, when the Acharyas write their commentaries, they're called Bhashya. So the word Bhashya is related to the word Bhaskara, which means the sun. So Prabhupada said we should have Bhagavatam class, we should try to bring out so many different lights. So the word, of course, the sun is a light. So Bhashya, commentary, means light, basically. That's the root of it. So the Acharyas bring out different lights. And of course, when you have a multifaceted, Krishna's often described this way, like a multifaceted jewel. So he can be seen in different ways. If you have a jewel, you know, they cut jewels and they have all the different sides. So when you shine in different ways, the light comes off in different ways. So sometimes you can look at something and you get different perspectives on it. You know, just like if you go to an art museum, you know, a sculpture, for example, in a museum, so they'll maybe put it in the middle of the floor so you can walk all the way around it. So we can sometimes it helps to understand something by looking at it in a variety of different ways. And sometimes the acharyas, they explain things in a way to kind of get our brains to think in a different way, get out of the grooves that we're naturally in, the mental, intellectual grooves that we're caught in. Because we're conditioned, we see things according to our conditioned vision and our conditioned way of thinking. So anyway, I just ran out of gas. I'll stop here. So many hands. We'll start with Madam Mati today. Who has the microphone?
I've got a couple of questions, but I couldn't understand, or maybe you did say, what is the purpose of the subtle form? What is the purpose? You know, we were hearing about the purpose of the gross form.
Yeah. Well, we heard that the subtle form, at least in reference to the jiva, is that it allows us to transmigrate from one body to another. And what seems to be implied, although Vishnu didn't say it directly, was, well, there has to be a source of the subtle. Just like all the material things that we see here, they come from the gross universal form. Mm-hmm. So what seemed to be implied was that our subtle bodies come from that subtle Virat Rupa, that Hiranyagarbha.
Mm-hmm. One more question. As far as in the purport also, I don't recall exactly, but we are supposed to rise above our gross and subtle. You know, it's easy to kind of think we're not this mm-hmm. body, but the subtle aspect. What is there a connection or any kind of relation between our subtle body and our eternal self? Is there any connection at all? In other words, what our nature, our subtle nature is, has anything to do with our constitutional nature?
I would say no, there's no connection. Subtle is also material. Krishna says he has eight separated energies, so the subtle. Now, one thing, it seems to be more, it's closer, you might say it's closer to the Atma, but it still has nothing to do. In fact, sometimes I think, you know, devotees, like brand new devotees may think, gee, I think I'm a gopi or something like that. And I just think, well, you know, I have a hard time. But you know, as one matures in advancing in Krishna consciousness, one starts getting actual realization. But just because my mind, I'll start mention, I don't know, this is a little risque maybe, but I got a letter from a homosexual man one time. And he said, I really am attracted to Krishna Balaram, and I really think maybe I have a relationship as a cowherd boy. So I thought, well, this is really, you know, shows how our mental, you know, we think that somehow because we have an attraction as complete neophytes that this is my swaroop. But it's not like that. You actually have to become Jariyati Ashu Yakosham Nirgina Manalo Yata. Kapila Dev says that devotional service dissolves the subtle body. But that body stays with us for a long time because it carries us from one body to another. But still, it must change. Someone brought this up one time about, don't we always have the same subtle body? So in one sense, maybe it's sort of like a vehicle, but the contents of it seem to change. You're like a sponge, it absorbs different things. So the body, because obviously my mind, the way it is now, in my next life, when I'm a dog, as I probably will be, then I'll have the body, the mind of a dog. It's the same subtle body. You might say it's the same substance, the same mind, but it somehow it's become, you know, rearranged or transformed, or somehow it's absorbed certain things, so it's changed in some sense. Although the material itself, material, quote, subtle, that subtle matter, it would seem to be the same, but because it's carrying us from one body to another.
So the individuality of a soul, I mean, we're all individuals, I guess, where does that come from? Or
the individuality of the soul.
Yeah, I mean, we all are individuals. We're all distinct individuals.
Well, of course, Prabhupada would give the analogy. He said, just like in America, there are so many Americans, but there's one supreme American, President Johnson. President. So in that sense, we're all the same, but we still have individuality somehow, spiritually. Because sometimes you may think, well, it seems like we have nothing. Now this, you know, we're getting into, there are disagreements even among Vaishnavas about what exactly the soul is. And, you know, Madhvacharya says we have an eternal nature. I think he talks about how you can only go, certain souls are predestined to go only so far spiritually and so on. But at least as Prabhupada taught us, Prabhupada taught that we have our sarup. You know, it's there. It's just covered over. And there's some debate about that point. But that's how Prabhupada taught. Yeah, we have a sarup, eternal sarup, and it's there, and somehow it's just dormant. Dormant means asleep. It has to be awakened. Has to be awakened by the practices of Krishna consciousness. Because there may be a tendency to think that it's just, you know, this infinitesimal spark of matter that has no personality or anything, just like a spark of light, impersonal spark of light. But we're not impersonal, we're personal. That personality is always there. It has to be uncovered somehow.
Just a quick question. Do you think that this Hiranyagarbha form, which is all the jivas, do you think that somehow, you know, this Mayavad conception of we're all one, do you think those two things are sort of confused, maybe?
The impersonalists, the Mayavadis, do talk about the Hiranyagarbha. And, of course, they don't see any distinction. They say that the jiva is just, this is just kind of an illusion. It's not really, there's no individuality. We're just thinking that we're individuals. Of course, their philosophy is so hard to explain because it doesn't seem to make any sense to us. But one thing, this, you know, Prabhupada says, I'll bring this up, it's a little controversial. Prabhupada says that, this is kind of off, not really answering your question. There's a couple of places where Prabhupada says that every living entity begins his material life as Brahma. Now, so this could be an explanation of what Prabhupada means there, possibly. Because Brahma is all of us at some point. Right? He's the soul of the Samashti Jivas. So in one sense, you could say we were all Brahma. Because otherwise, you try to do the math and you think, well, how could that be possible? How could we all start as Brahma? The whole universe is pervaded by jivas. It just doesn't seem to make any sense. So this is one possible way of dealing with that.
I have one question. We are approaching Advaita Acharya's appearance day in a few days. According to Chaitanya Charitamrita chapter 6, Adi Lila, it says that Advaita Acharya is the in charge or god of the ingredient cause. There is the instrumental cause, there is the efficient cause, there is the ingredient cause, mm-hmm. And he is that. At the same time, he could not understand 13, 14 Bhagavad Gita, Sarvata Pani Padam Tat Sarvata Akshishiromukam, that God has everywhere, the eyes, legs, the whole universal form. And whole night he was crying, he could not understand, but he is the cause of the whole creation ingredients. And then Lord Chaitanya had to come in his dream, okay, So I was saying, like you are saying that Prabhupada didn't give like a sometime, we use a technical.
Yeah.
Then I was thinking, Advaita Acharya also could not understand. He's a Mahavishnu himself. I mean, is it like a really like almost impossible?
Well, I don't know if he really couldn't understand Mahavishnu. He's playing that role. But it is an indication of how, you know, these subtle aspects of our philosophy are very, very difficult to understand. So, you know, he's... I mean, just the idea, sometimes I think like this. I think, well, Mahavishnu, we read about Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu universes are coming from the pores of his body. And now he's here in front of us, not us, but 500 years ago, he's walking around like an ordinary, looks just like one of us. Well, how can you... I was thinking that one day, then I thought, yeah, but he comes from Krishna. Is it any more amazing that Krishna is coming and walking around among us? He's beyond Mahavishnu. So in any case, I think Mahavishnu knows everything. He's acting as a student sometimes. He's taking a subordinate role. You know, his Leela with Lord Chaitanya, he doesn't like Lord Chaitanya treating him as a superior. So he takes that role of a student sometimes.
Prabhu, thank you for a very nice class. It was extraordinary. Early in your descriptions, you mentioned that our subtle body is necessary for transmigration from one body to the next. It's also necessary to transcend the previous body when we're on the path.
Mm-hmm.
So our development of our consciousness, as you were describing just now, evolving our understanding, our consciousness, and elevating us, transcending the previous subtle body to our previous gross body to an elevated form.
Yeah, I was thinking that the Vishwanath, he gives that as a reason, that the subtle body is there for transmigration, but of course it has other functions as well. I often think about how the mind is so important. And of course, what is yoga? It's about controlling the mind. But there's so much psychology in Krishna consciousness, you might say. We try to motivate ourselves. What's motivation about? It's about psychology. You know? There's so many self-help books out there. Think differently. Think and grow rich. You know? So we're trying to think in a certain way to help us advance in Krishna consciousness. And of course, hearing constantly, repeatedly the philosophy, that's, you know, affecting us intellectually, affecting our mind and intelligence, which we apply in our advancement in Krishna consciousness. So the mind and, back to this thing that I read here, isn't that what Prabhupada said? Fred, that slogan from the Bhagavad Gita, training the mind and educating human nature to rise up to the plane of the soul spirit. So we're training the mind. So, yeah, the mind has, it's an aspect of our... We rely on our bodies and we rely on our minds, both in sadhana bhakti. And of course, they're all sort of dissolved. It's almost as if the subtle body is, in some sense, you might say, dissolved in the at least in our conception of who we are. It's all mixed together. So much so that scientists think there is no mind. It's just the brain. It's just the mechanism of it. They can't separate the two. Dimashami Prabhu?
I've heard Parokshavad described as it's keeping those that aren't sincere. I mean, right? That's often
that's part of it. Sometimes Krishna speaks in code, enigmas, makes enigmatic statements that only certain people can understand.
And then the other point,